Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Kurdistan Connection here on Media News with myself, Matt Broomfield. On the Kurdistan Connection, we speak, of course, about the political situation, the economic situation and the military and cultural situation in Kurdistan, but also about how that connects to the outside world through politics, through diplomacy, through cultural exchange and through other means as well. And I'm very excited for our discussion today because we're going to be broadening a little bit from the previous discussions we've had on the show. I'm joined today by Joe from the Solidarity Economy Association, and the SEA is a kind of UK-based organisation, but has links all over the world, not just with Rojava, but with a number of other places, also with the Americas, also with Africa, also with Southern Asia. I know we're going to speak about today, so I'm kind of really excited to welcome Joe to hear about a new project they have, which we'll hear all about in a moment, bringing together people from all of these regions, from four continents at least, if not more, actually, to discuss about how we can build a better economy for a new world, learning from Rojava, but also learning from many exciting political projects and economic projects that people listening might know less about. So, Joe, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks. Yeah, it's great to be here.
Maybe you could begin just by introducing the Solidarity Economy Association. What is it? What has it done? What is it doing? And what's your role there?
Sure. Yeah. So we're a small UK-based cooperative. We see ourselves as part of the what's often called the cooperative movement. But we don't just focus on cooperatives because we think that cooperatives are like one tool in many for like transforming the economy, or like more accurately, like bringing up the economy, which is actually very old, like much older than capitalism, because we think like cooperation and working together and mutual aid and all these kinds of values are as old as humanity. Otherwise, like we wouldn't be here today. And what's new actually is capitalism and the repression of our ability to like meet our own needs collectively. So this is why we're called the Solidarity Economy Association, because this term solidarity economy has been built up through especially social movements in Latin America and like the Global South, also South Europe. But it's not a term that's known that much in the UK or North Europe. So we're trying to like bring more this awareness, like that there is this movement and this, you know, really existing way of, you know, meeting our needs, like having this kind of economy, which already exists everywhere in the world, has always existed, but is not perhaps conscious of itself at this time in history.
For sure. And yeah, there's some examples of that I think we're going to talk about in a minute. Maybe you could just say, how do you try to foster a more of an understanding of that here in the UK? What kind of practical steps does the SEA take to revitalize the idea of a solidarity economy?
Yeah, so we go to various different events, like co-op movement events or like social movement events, and talk about the solidarity economy. We're building a network of people organizing in solidarity economy projects, initiatives, movements, community groups, this kind of stuff. And we also run like internationalist solidarity projects. Like the best known of these probably is Cooperation in Mesopotamia, which is building knowledge, awareness and like solidarity from especially kind of people in co-ops and other people here in the UK with what's happening in Rojava and in different parts of Kurdistan. So especially Rojava and also Bakur, where there's, you know, cooperatives which are being set up as part of a broader like political revolutionary movement for the betterment of society and the world.
For sure. So I want to go on in a minute to speak about some of the new projects you have coming up to continue building these links. But I was kind of interested, with the way that you framed it about the solidarity economy being something which is older than capitalism and which has kind of long existed, and we just need to like kind of get back to that and return people to that understanding. And I wondered if you could, and then maybe because I know, if either from in Kurdistan itself or from other regions of the world, how do you kind of see those old ideas and that older mentality of solidarity like manifesting still in the present day in the way people relate to one another or the way they build their economy.
Yeah, I guess what we see is that, like, people who are oppressed, whether that's through displacement, diaspora communities, people facing like extreme hardship, like the class system in the UK, the queer like community, whatever that form of oppression is, you see that people are like coming together and collectively meeting their needs and finding ways to do that. And that's something that's always happened. But the like kind of the NGO system and the kind of like a lot of the funding and like there's lots of funding available in especially in the UK and in the West, but that funding tends to get channeled towards people who already have more access to resources, like you know, it's there, for example, who know how to apply for such things, who know the right things to say, who are part of like kind of structures which have like a managerial structure and things like this. So one of the things we do is try to like, yeah, build relationships and connections between different groups who often are like really organizing at capacity, you know, to like meet the survival needs of their own communities. It can be quite difficult to like, you know, put your head up from what you're doing and sort of see what else is going on and like make those connections and know where resources are available. So a lot of the work we do is like, yeah, finding out what is already there and like building relationships with those things and trying to find out what support needs there are and seeing if there are ways that we can show, you know, at least like signposting to things that are needed, whether that's funding or venues or like other groups or what.
For sure. And yes, yeah, so I know kind of, yeah, the reason you're here today, as well as to speak in general about these ideas, is because the SEA has a new series of events coming up that's going to be part of this process of, you know, helping people all across the world to speak to one another and to learn from one another. Do you want to just introduce these events? When does it start? What's happening? Who's involved?
Yeah, great. So the idea is like a series of conversations, much like this one, that are online. And part of the idea is like translation, like how do we learn about other ideas and other movements that are really building like social and political transformation in their own contexts, because there are always some things that we hear about, but most of it we kind of don't, or like most people in the world also are not hearing about, you know, what the work of each other is. And a lot of that is because of the kind of the omnipresence of the English language, which can, you know, having a lingua franca can like enable a lot more conversations, but also who accesses that is then quite limited. And also, of course, there are problems with the dominance of the English language as well, that it then threatens the existence of other languages, such as Kurdish, for example, and like many others. So we're going to have live interpretation for all of these events in like, I think it's like 7 languages, including Kurdish and Turkish and Arabic and French and Spanish. Amazing. And Punjabi, and also, of course, English. So each of these organizations, and it's actually 6 organizations on 6 different continents. The wow. 6th one, we haven't announced it yet, though. That will be the Latin American group coming soon. So they'll all be able to talk in their, you know, the language that they want to, and then it will be also like interpreted into all the other languages as well.
Amazing. And yeah, I think we're going to focus on a couple of the speakers. And obviously one, as you've said, people are going to have to stay tuned to find out. Maybe you could just give an overview of those groups that have been announced that will be participating.
Yeah, great. So the first one actually is this coming Saturday, the 10th of September, and it's with a group called Cooperation Jackson. They're organizing in the south of the United States in Mississippi. Mississippi is actually like the poorest state in the United States, in like the Union of the United States. And it's also the place with the highest percentage of Black land ownership, through like some historic trajectories to do with like the so-called abolishment of slavery, and like political stuff that was going on at the time. But for this reason, it's quite an interesting like strategic place for this organization. So they're building among other things, like a solidarity economy anchored in cooperatives that are really rooted in like the population, like poor working class black population of the region, and trying to connect them also to each other through like supply chain, and also to bring skills that this community is lacking. So there's, for example, like a farm that's named after like a historic black organizer, Mary Lou Hamer. And then there's also, I believe they have even like a network of squats in order to house people. And they have like a 3D printing lab in order to also bring these like, you know, more modern cutting edge skills, which usually it's like white university educated people that have those kinds of skills. So to put those skills into the hands of the population.
And so when you say it's based in the community, or kind of, yeah, what does that look like? So Jackson, it's like it's a pre-existing community, it's a city, and they've gone there to work with people. Like, what's the connection?
Yeah,
with kind of order?
So there's like as I understand it, this project came out of the Malcolm X grassroots movement, which was like going for a much longer period of time and has branches in many different cities. So they decided to set it up in Mississippi due to like the history of that place and the like the reality of that place. But there was already like a lot of people there who already were like connected to this struggle. And it's really rooted in the Black liberation struggle. You know, people organizing today in Jackson are people who are like related to historic people that we might know from like the Black Panthers or like from other, you know, manifestations in history of the Black liberation movement. So there's other also strategies as part of what they're doing, like building community assemblies is also a part of that, like kind of similar to, I guess, the commune system in Rojava. And then also like a municipalism, like maybe similar to what happened in Bakur. Yeah, so we're really looking forward to talking with them actually and getting a bit of an update on their strategic direction and how it's going and like what are their plans for the future.
Yeah, because it's kind of interesting as kind of we talk often about Rojava, but I think it's very important as well that we remember what the Kurdish movement has done in Bakur, in Turkish occupied Kurdistan, where they have worked and have been working and are working to build something kind of within a very powerful and dominant state, and without that state kind of withdrawing or being militarily pushed out of the region, but rather doing something that maybe looks a little bit more in some senses like what we might want to do here in the UK, kind of not waiting for a revolution to start here or in the United States indeed, but starting to build within a capitalist system, but finding kind of ways to work around that.
Yeah, exactly. So that one will be this Saturday, and it's 4 to 6 PM UK time.
Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, we'll come back to Cooperative Jackson maybe in a moment. Maybe you could mention some of the other speakers. I know that there's speakers from India, for example, from Africa, that have already been announced.
Yeah, so I'll just run through them maybe. So the second one in October, 8th of October. So they're all the second Saturday of the month. We tried to keep a kind of consistent time frame. And they're all anchored at, like, in the end, we anchored it at UTC because, it's quite confusing, but, like, the time system in the UK changes after the second one, but, like, not in some of the other countries. Organising these time zones was a bit confusing. But, yeah, so the second one, it's also 4 to 6pm, and it's with Aborigine, actually, like, the Women's Economy Structures of Rojava, who are setting up, like, women's cooperatives, but also, like, a broader women's economy. With different kinds of economic projects in the region. And then the one in November is with a group called Grassroots Liberation in Kenya, in Nairobi in Kenya, and they're organizing actually like in the informal settlements, like basically like the ghetto in the city of Nairobi, which has a huge like really kind of impoverished, also like black, like working class, like underclass population. There's like 70% of the population living with like really intense state violence and like forced evictions, no access to clean water. And actually, yeah, access to clean water is something that like most of these groups have in common, actually, most of the populations who are organizing themselves in these different groups. So it's also interesting seeing things like this. The, like, you know, on six continents, like, people struggling with the same problems. Then in January of next year, we have a group called Zamin Prapti Sangharsh Committee, which is in the Punjab region of India. And this is a self-organization of Dalit farmers. So the Dalits, if you know, there's like this caste system in India. They're the, like, so-called lowest caste. And it's an organization that's been going for like at least several years already, and is a struggle to like reclaim land that people are all, like, the Dalit people of the region are already legally entitled to but are not being able to access. And then at the same time, they're building up like collective agriculture methods and like sharing the produce among the community as well. So we can see, like, in many different ways, there's also this like solidarity economy approach.
For sure.
And then the final one that we already have promoted is with Guerrilla Translation. So this is the only one in Europe. They're quite a different kind of organization. They're a cooperative in Spain. And the reason we think they're important is A, because it's a translation cooperative, and this whole project is like a translation project, essentially. And B, because they're trying to create a new model of cooperatives which suits like a different form of economy. So it's especially for like activist translators in their project, but it's also a model which is replicable to be used among different types of workers who are also like trying to create social change.
Amazing. Well, I mean, I'm sure we could talk about any of these for half an hour or more, and indeed maybe we'll have the chance to invite some of these organizations onto the podcast, as well as joining on the second Saturday of every month in the coming months to hear from them. And but for now, I think we should probably just focus on one or two, and maybe it would make sense to speak a little bit about Abri Ajim, as you said, the women's economy organization based in north and east Syria, in Rojava. So I think you've possibly done some work with them prior to this event as well. So yeah, maybe you could, you said they're trying to build this kind of solidarity economy in Rojava. And I think it's an aspect of the revolution in Rojava people tend to know a little bit less about. What does that look like in practice? What are they actually doing concretely on the ground? So maybe you could say, yeah, what kind of projects Abri Ajim are involved in, and then why or what do you think we can learn from them in the UK?
Yeah, great. So yeah, we've actually been working with them for a few years already. They're one of the first organizational bodies like that we had contact with, I think from around 2016. We had many meetings and discussions, and we also like hosted events with them before, mostly at like cooperative events in the UK. We also visited them a couple of times. So I was in Rojava on a women's delegation in 2016, and I met with what at that time it was called the Women's Economy Committee of Congressstar. In fact, I think it still is basically like part of Congressstar, but it was quite new at that time. They already had several cooperatives, and we visited a couple of them. And then again in 2018, there was a short, small cooperative delegation where we met with them again, and it was a much more like advanced organization. There's many different types of structures now within that. And we went and visited like lots of different women's cooperatives and also economic projects. So they range quite a lot from, they have like agricultural projects, tailors, they'd open like a women's market in Derek, which we visited, which is quite like one of the things that they're trying to do really is to build obviously like autonomy for women, so that like women traditionally very dependent on men. Men are seen as like the breadwinners, of course, and this like creates a lot of like dependence and therefore like a lot of problems. Like if there's, for example, like a domestic abuse situation or another problem, like it's very difficult for women to then like, you know, stand on their own feet or like make their own decisions. But it's also about like building relationships between women. So women like working together, overcoming social stigma in like what kinds of work women should do or not do, and like learn new skills and this kind of stuff. So this is like a really important aspect of the work. So for example, when I visited them in 2018, they'd opened like a chicken rearing cooperative, and they said like, this is really breaking a social stigma that like people don't think women can do this kind of work. And even with the Derek market, they said it's really surprising for people. They go in this market and it was like a kind of like long corridor of stalls with only women like selling stuff. And they said people get really surprised when they go in here and they see only women. It's like really changing something about people's understandings of what, you know, what is a woman and what can women do.
Yeah, and we're kind of working, you know, yeah, not just on the level of, you know, setting up projects, but trying to tackle as part of the wider Kurdish women's movement, which is really trying to change the mentality and the patriarchal mentality of everyone in the region, but particularly of men through their work.
Yeah, exactly. And also of women, that women can realise like how powerful they are, you know, and how much they can do, especially when they come together.
For sure. Because I mean, again, it's, yeah, I kind of, albeit this revolution's happened in Rojava, certainly with the economy, the Kurdish movement has taken not really taken a sort of top-down approach on a lot of issues, maybe in terms of, you know, making sure that everyone's got enough bread to eat, you know, everyone can get heating oil and so on. They are quite involved in the economy, but rather than, you know, taking control of the economy and nationalizing everything, whatever that might look like, if such a thing were possible, they're kind of trying to also build up from the bottom these kind of cooperatives. Kind of, yeah, you've visited the region. Kind of why do you think it is that they've taken this approach, and do you think it's working? Is it reaching people? Are women's lives changing in Rojava?
Well, it will be really good to hear an update, because obviously it's like 4 years since I was last there. But yeah, following the news a lot, and of course speaking to other people who've been there, like, of course it's like a long work, like a revolution is never finished, as they say. But it's really about building up the self-organization of society. And this, I think we can really see, is coming along by the amount of people who are being involved in all of the different types of organization, right? Whether that's like a neighborhood assembly, or whether that's like a cooperative, all of the various different like committees and councils and different organizational structures. Like, it's such a huge project, right? to build up this like political consciousness, I guess, really, and like ways for everyone to be involved in organizing daily life.
For sure. Maybe you could take, so yeah, I know it's been a few years, but from just personally, from the, when you have visited the region, because I know you've spent time there, was there maybe one conversation or one experience, one woman that you met there that was kind of inspiring to you, or that's really stuck with you from the work of Arbaria Jin or the women's economy?
There was, yeah, I mean, there's so many. I'm thinking also of like other structures as well. Like, we visited one of the women's houses. I remember it was really, really inspiring, like that they're doing this kind of community, I don't know, like community mediation, almost like one of part of the new justice system, right? Like, how do you like solve the problems of society? Like,
yeah,
and try to steer it away from this like court system and stuff. So yeah, it was really a really strong, empowering like conversation with somebody that's been organizing in that. But yeah, also with the women's economy, of course, like especially in like the extent of ambition, I think, is really really inspiring. Like, for example, I visited the first time in 2016, and one of the things that the women's economy said, it actually wasn't like in the end, I think, something that happened under the women's economy structure, but like they gave us this kind of brief, basically, like of a plan, like a proposal on paper for a women's village. And I was like, wow, that sounds like an amazing idea. And I was just thinking, you know, like, oh, in the UK, we like have so many ideas, and like, how many of them do we do and stuff? But then 2 years later, I went back there and they already built it, like, and it's Jinwa, like Jinwa Women's Village.
Yeah.
And now, like, people are living there.
Yeah.
There's loads of people living there now. Like, when I last visited, there were a few people living there, and they hadn't like quite officially launched it, or they'd only just launched it and the houses were still being finished or something like this. But now it's like a thriving community, and like there was a webinar a couple of months ago with them, and they were like showing pictures and stuff like this. And it's like, in that number of years, it's like, what, 6 years? Like, I just don't know how we would even manage to, like, get the land if we were doing it in the UK. But they're just, it's so fast. Like, and I think this is really inspiring, like, to build a village, like, in that number of years and have people living there and, like, organizing together. It's really amazing. And they have, like, a healthcare center and a school and a bakery and agriculture and stuff like this. And actually, one of the projects we're supporting in Rojava right now is a women's economy project. And it has, I think, quite a lot of similarities, maybe. So it's also like a women's village for women and children, especially that like lost family members in the war. And it's also going to have like collective agriculture and stuff like this. And this is one of the needs of that project is like water. So we did, as you maybe know, like a couple of years ago, this like Water for Rojava campaign, in order to raise money for like specifically water projects, because it's such a huge problem again of like all the groups actually in our webinars. But in Rojava, it's like this really huge humanitarian crisis at the moment, that like Turkey is cutting the water supply into the region, and there's just like this vast need for water. And of course, like any amount that you earn is like kind of small in comparison to the need, but we're able to support small projects like this. Like, I mean, you know, it's a big project, but like relatively in terms of like the need of the whole population of the region. So we're supporting like the water need for this community.
Amazing. Yeah, and for sure. Yeah, Pete, I'm sure when we hear from Aubrey-Ajin, the month after this one, on the second Saturday, there will be an opportunity to hear as well about these projects and other new projects that have started up, I know, in the past years. We're getting to the end of the conversation now. I guess, maybe my last question would be, you know, we've spoken about particularly about Cooperative Jackson in the US and about Aubrey-Ajin, also mentioned these other projects. What's the common thread? What do you think unites these kind of different communities and these different activist or political groups?
Yeah, so the title of the project is actually Conversations with Game Changers. So we're calling these like the game changers, like these are, which is a bit like maybe jargony in English, which is quite difficult to translate into other languages. But it's really about like who is coming up with like quite groundbreaking, like new ways of organizing in a kind of broader strategy for liberation, like of society. And the other thing that they have in common is like a solidarity economy approach, and we see this in a really broad way. Again, it's about like meeting the needs of society, meeting basic needs, food, shelter, water, housing, this kind of stuff. So the full title, it's Conversations with Game Changers, Solidarity Economy Strategies for a New and Better World.
Great. Yeah, and yeah, I mean, it's something certainly that I'm always reflecting on with the Rojava Revolution, about, you know, yeah, what it actually takes to make a change, to do something, and the confidence that then gives you, and the hope also that it gives both to yourself and to your own people, but also to other people across the world. So I think it would be wonderful to diversify and broaden that conversation. So as you said, the first of these discussions, all the information will be below this in the article on the Medjay News website, below this podcast. Also, of course, on the Solidarity Economy Association website. But just to repeat, it's this Saturday, 10th of September, 4 to 6 p.m. UK time, is the first conversation with Cooperative Jackson in Mississippi in America. And then you can also see below the dates and the links for the subsequent events, including with Women's Economy, Aubrey-Ajin in Rojava next month. So, Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
And thank you also to our listeners. And we look forward to speaking again with our friends and supporters of the Kurdish movement across the globe. And in the meantime, we hope you will tune in to the Solidarity Economy Association's upcoming series of events. Thank you and goodbye.